Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
Worse because actors are so.
Hey, everybody, it's me, Duncan Trussell. You are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. The Duncan Trussell. Fucking damn.
You gotta leave that in. You have to leave that in.
Microphone fell off. Shut up. God damn it. I don't need a heckler in my podcast symphony area.
Hey, what are you gonna do about it?
We're brought to you by Shure Design T-shirts. You can go to shuredesignt-shirts.com and get 10% off a T-shirt. We're also brought to you by Amazon.com. You know, you can buy anything from Amazon. You can buy garden hoses, butt plugs, chanting malas, your school textbooks, the precursors for most drugs like
eggs,
crystal meth or DMT, egg precursors, which are chickens. You can buy cats, cat toys, cat DJ booths,
and Chardonnay.
Chardonnays, and delicious. You can even buy inhalants. So if you're going to buy one of these things from Amazon.com, go through our portal, would you? They give us a percentage. It's a way for you to support the podcast without having to pay any money at all, because you're already going to buy this stuff. I don't even know why Amazon does this. I'm not really sure what they gain from it, because everyone knows that Amazon exists. But if you're going to buy those dehydrated grapes for your fallout shelter, or you just want to get some kind of French tickler or cock ring. Cock rings are great, Johnny. Don't look at me like that. If you want to, have you ever used a cock ring, Johnny?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
They're fucking awesome. You strap one of those things on your dick's like a, it's like a catching water in a water balloon.
I don't think it was awesome. It was fun.
I think it's very fun.
It's fun.
To smack some cock rings on and go deep into the hole of perversion and vileness that so many people in the world think is evil.
Because it is. It's bad.
You think sex is evil, Johnny?
Yeah, it's really bad. I think it's something that I'm getting better at stopping doing.
Hold on. Yeah. Hold on. I got to stop this. For some reason, I don't. Hold on. Guys, you do a check right into that mic.
Shao, cast
okay,
no.
Okay, that's work.
Drops.
Guys, here's what you're hearing. What you're hearing is me, for the first time, trying to do advertisements with a guest in the room instead of spending 3 obsessive days trying to do an opening monologue, which is why these podcasts don't come out quickly lately.
Same with
I'm
me.
I'm mildly depressed, and I'm sick of sitting in front of a microphone in my fucking office trying to say something inspirational. I can't think of that all the time. And I can't think, even saying anything is hard. So here it is. Quick opening thing there. Amazon, I said it. Shure Design T-shirts, I said it.
Gunt Crary's.
Excuse-moi?
Yeah, that's the other sponsor. Brought to you by Gunt.
Gunt Cherries.
When you need a blasting from the jast, pick up a Gunt.
The sweet voice that you're hearing is my dear, dear friend, Johnny Pemberton. And man, I fucking love this guy. He's the one who comes over to my house when I'm bummed out. He's the one who soothes me. A true friend, Johnny Pemberton. Welcome.
Thanks. Welcome here. Welcome to B. It's pretty good. These mics sound great. Really happy.
They do sound good,
just
huh?
Just touch your dog.
They do sound good. Mics sound good. And Johnny, Tell me exactly what happened to you yesterday, because I'm so proud of you.
This story?
Yeah.
Oh, this. I mean, I feel like this is a story that's, to me, is kind of boring. But I guess the fact that it's boring is why it's sort of badass, isn't it?
I think it's badass.
Okay. Well, so occasionally I'll go on a commercial audition because why not? It's free practice.
You're a hard worker, man. Because when somebody, I don't go on commercial auditions anymore. Right. But if someone called me, and if I knew I had a commercial audition next week. Right. I would already be getting depressed about that.
Well, I feel that same way now for the most part. And the only reason I went to this one is because it wasn't in Santa Monica, which means it's 10 miles away. And I was also just like, why not? Because it's just good to, you know, it's like a thing where if you play basketball for a living and you don't play basketball every day, you should probably change that because it's good to pick up the basketball at least every day, even if it's something where it sucks and just a practice thing. Sometimes I think doing stuff just to do it, because if that's what you wanted to be doing all the time, you should be doing it all the time. Even
yes.
If it's a shitty version of what you want to do.
Yes.
So I'm like, I'll go to this fucking thing. Whatever. It's for a product that I don't really care about, and doesn't directly conflict with me morally, which would be, I would say no instantly.
Right.
So it wasn't like for Halliburton or fucking
Monsanto.
Like, yeah, it wasn't for that. So I go there. And I walk into the place, and it's, you know, it's like the standard shithouse place where it's just frosted glass doors and narrow hallways with a bunch of idiots who look vaguely similar to me with their hands in their head in their lap reading something.
How long was the drive to the place?
It was not that. It was like West Hollywood, which is still terrible.
How long was the drive?
Probably took me about 25 minutes.
All right, 25-minute drive through traffic.
Oh,
to
yeah,
get to a place
traffic.
With frosted doors to read something from a sheet. Do you remember what the lines were?
No, because I didn't get a chance to look at them because of what happened.
Okay.
So I am...
Before you go on, now you guys have to understand, those of you who've never gone on a commercial audition...
That's terrible.
There is, as far as I'm aware of, there are very few things as demeaning as going on a commercial audition. This is like jumping backwards through time to another unregulated era where you had to bow to people.
Oh, absolutely. It's like there's babies. Some places there's like babies running around.
Parrots on the floor.
Oh, God.
I almost stepped on a parrot once at a commercial audition. No joke.
And it's one of like 12 parrots that was there. Please, please pick my parrot.
Yes.
Please.
So you go into these rooms and you're depending on, like, in LA, there are like warehouses or commercial auditioning factories.
Oh, it is. It's like a fucking, because they have like big numbers on the doors, like room four.
Yes.
Room four checking in.
Room four.
16 through 29, step up.
Yes, yes.
Ching, ching. No, you got to go back to room 10. This is Jack Fruit's commercial.
Yes.
You want to be over at Duracell, it's room 10.
Now, these, you have to understand what you do when you come to a commercial audition is that you are also surrounded by a spectrum of humans that you are somehow in. Because someone who was in a hurry got your headshot or looked through a bunch of headshots and was like, him.
Or the robot did it, where it's like you have a beard, you're this age, you're this ethnicity, and you've done this. So it's like you get sorted into the pile of people who are on some demographic the same as you.
Demeaning, you're in this strange waiting room surrounded by other people who are all equally they're in varying levels of anxiety and desperation, because many of them are, and I was one of these at one point, operating under the illusion that if I could just book one, man, just one, I'll be able to fill my gas tank up all the way instead of halfway when I go to the gas station. So there's varying degrees of anxiety, and you're also faced with this kind of unavoidable truth that you are auditioning to be the mouthpiece for a corporation,
right?
And that doesn't necessarily feel wonderful.
Yeah, you're succumbing. You're giving up your will, or there's some sort of better way to say it. But you're basically checking your ego at the door.
And yes, you checked your ego. And also, there's a factor of supply and demand here, because the sea of actors, the invisible ocean of actors that flows through Hollywood, it does not. All you got to do is open up the fucking, turn on that faucet, and actors will come pouring into any room that you want. I could go on Craigslist and have 50 actors in my backyard in 3 hours.
Yep.
Like that. They just come. Yep. They don't care. So it's a supply and demand thing. Whenever there's more, there's a huge demand and limited supply, the people in control of the supply, which is the job.
They're in control.
They are in control. Now go on with
this. They know it. They know they're in control too. And it creates this sense of entitlement and power that I think is not really there for the most part. So, which leads into what to the event. So I go in there, right? And it's like sometimes there's no explanation. Sometimes there's like a big like, oh, so this is that, you're this, say this. Like there's a whole rigmarole, which is totally unnecessary for the most part because really they don't give a fuck about what you say. It's more just like, oh yeah, that's the look of the guy. That's him. Like,
yes.
For the most part. For almost 90% of the time, there's almost nothing you can do or can't, nothing you could do to hurt your chances as much as you could to help them, as long as you're just competent and friendly and slightly interesting. But so.
It's very similar to going to a place, writing your info on the back of your business card and dropping it in a roller that's going to get rolled, and one person's name's going to get pulled out of the car.
Right. It's just as random, except there is something. They're picking it for a reason, but it's a reason that you don't have any control over for the most part.
I took a commercial acting class, brother.
You did?
Yes, I did.
Cool.
Yes, I did. Stuart Robinson's commercial acting class, where he teaches you the importance of the slate.
The slate! The slate! That's such a big deal. It's like the biggest thing. Like, how to slate.
How to slate. And for you guys who don't know what the slate is when you it's when you've been marched into this sterile room with a bored asshole operating the camera, and you have like two lines that you've just driven maybe 30 minutes, maybe an hour to come and read. The slate is your one chance to show that spark. So that's where you do it, man. That slate. That's where you get their attention by saying something clever or funny.
Wow. Hi, this is head back up to you. This is Johnny Pemberton. Age? Yeah, this. And over 18. And here we go.
Yes.
And, oh, too much. Too much. Just do it normal.
Yeah. And then they'll say, turn profiles. So you have to turn to your left and turn to your right to show them the sides of your head.
Also, if you're doing a commercial that involves food, they want to see your hands, so you don't have hideous hands if you're holding a product.
Wow.
Yeah. I did an Apple commercial once, and they gave me a manicure beforehand.
Wow.
Never aired, though. And I think I'm probably in deep breach of contract by even saying that, but no, it doesn't matter.
So there you. So hopefully I've set up the climate of a commercial audition for you guys so you can understand how special this event that happened to Johnny is. So go on, what happened?
So I walk in there and and the casting associate is sitting there in a stool next and a little table next to the door to the room, and it has the sign-in sheet, and I sign in, and she's in the midst of talking with some guy very loudly about, like, oh, yeah, Omaha, yeah, I know a guy when we worked there, and then, oh, do you know this? And, yeah, well, I was there for a couple of years back when this happened. It's just, you know, standard drivel conversation that I'm sure he had initiated because he wanted to, like, Megan, yeah, she knows me, you know, some bullshit like that.
This was an actor talking
to her. Actor talking to the associate because it's like he wants to get in her favor, I'm sure. At the very least, it's just small talk. He's making unnecessary small talk because he wants to, whatever. I don't even know. Maybe not. But either way, that's going on. She pauses their conversation and explains the stuff to me, which didn't make any sense. I'm like, oh, I'll just look at it in the packet here. Look at the packet. So I walk. I take the packet from her. They resume their conversation. I walk over and I see a guy. Some guy taps me on the shoulder. I'm like, oh, hey. It's a guy. About a year and a half ago, the last commercial I did, which was, like I said, this is going to be the last one I ever do because I fucking hated it so much.
Yes.
He was the guy who I did the commercial with. Nice young guy, actor, comedian, good guy. You know, not good, not bad. Good person, though, you know. And he's like, oh, how's it going? It's, you know, it's me, remember my name. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm good. And I'm just looking down at the thing. I'm like, oh, so what's been up and stuff? And all of a sudden, like, I hear, like, something to my left. Someone's talking to me. And then he also recognizes it as well. So I turn over, and she says to me, to us, she says, I said stop talking, no more talking, you understand me? And I'm like, well, that's weird, because she was just talking much louder than we were, and so I figured it was okay to talk, right? And we were talking very quietly, very, very minimal talking. It wasn't like real like, oh, buddy, oh, cool, ha ha, wasn't that.
You're not in a theater.
No.
You're not in a movie theater.
I have a very
low
voice.
You're in a waiting room.
I have a very, very low voice.
You're in a waiting room talking because the person running the audition is talking.
Right. Well, she's not running the audition. She's running the waiting room.
She's running the waiting room. Yeah. So the lady's running the waiting room. She's just been yapping.
Right.
You begin talking, and she says to you.
She says that to stop talking, but she said it as though she'd already said it, and we didn't hear it because we were talking.
Like you're in the fourth grade.
Exactly. And so I turn around. I'm like, oh, that's – I'm choking a little surprised. I'm like, okay. I understand that, I'm talking too loud. But then I was like, what I said was, I figured it was okay because you guys were also talking. That's exactly what I said.
Yeah. Pointed out the truth.
Right. And then this that gangly dude who was talking to the casting associate says to me, whoa, that's a good way to talk to casting.
Oh,
very sarcastically, like I just burned a bridge, baby. What? I just burned my chance. I just shot my – I just clipped my wings.
Now, let me stop you there. I want to stop you there. Now, you guys have to understand that fascism rears its ugly head in all forms of life. Fascism is a societal structure that pops up everywhere. It doesn't just pop up in the government. It pops up where there is limited supply, someone in control of that supply, and another person who, rather than freeing themselves to find their own supply, has decided to stroke the cock or pussy of the thing in control of the supply.
Exactly.
These are the dwarfs of Satan. These are the pigs snuffling at the feet of power, and they are everywhere. You'll find them in the classroom. You'll find them at your office, and goddamn, you will find them in the stinking, sterile office of Hollywood commercial casting.
You find them everywhere because people are – they're frightened because a lot of times people in that position don't really have much of a personal voice. So for them, this is their life. And so they have to be – they toe the line. They play by the rules because it's like, what else would I do?
Casting –
what can I do?
In Hollywood, traditional Hollywood, casting is very similar to the priest class in some archaic religion.
That's a good analogy.
So here you have essentially a low-level cleric in the temple of money, and this pig disciple has – recognized a blasphemy has happened.
Right.
Blasphemy has insulted the cleric.
I spoke back.
Ah, that is no way to speak with a priest.
How do you wish to carry his favor into the next world?
If you speak to the priest as such, you'll be thrown out of the temple.
Why, did you see that? Did you see what this man just said? He just spake back forth into the face of a cleric.
Yes.
Oh, how dare. Such insolence.
Yes.
And on a Tuesday.
Yes. This is no different than Game of Thrones and that shitty old man who sits next to Joffrey.
But that's the thing about the whole situation is that what angered me wasn't her telling me to be quiet. Like, I can understand that.
Of course.
I can, because you're not supposed to talk loud outside the room. And what
no,
I
you
said,
shouldn't.
And what I said was a little smart-alecky, but also, who cares, right?
Yes.
What got me, what really teed me up was this guy, you know, doing like what we just said, saying that to me to try to make himself look better. And I was just like, I didn't think at all. It was one of those things where I really didn't stop to think about it. I was just like, no, this is not worth it. This is just like, I'm feeling bad all the way over there. I'm just like, this is stupid. It's dumb. So I just took that script. I didn't throw it. I just dropped it on the ground. And I looked at him and I said, fuck you guys. And I just walked out casually and got in my car and drove home.
Glory.
Very, very casual.
Glory. Oh, glory. Fucking glory. You guys, there is an opportunity for rebellion at every level of society. And anytime you throw that fucking script down and tell a goddamn fascist piece of shit to fuck off, you win, not just for yourself, but for all of us, a little bit. Anytime we push back against that kind of bullshit power, look, if you want someone to be quiet, you know what you say to them? I'm really sorry. Mm-hmm. Do you guys mind keeping it down? If you want to talk, can you go outside?
Right.
And then if you say, oh, I'm sorry, I saw you talking, you'd be like, yeah, I know, I'm sorry, I should be quiet. That's what you say. Why? Right. Because it's a human. Mm-hmm. That's why. It's a human who's doing a job, who's given their time to you. You gave your time to them.
Right. And
you're not a fucking – you're not some kind of street urchin trying to mm-hmm. get a job in a coal factory. You're a fucking actor. You go to – you've trained. You're a trained goddamn actor. And this piece of fucking shit, Mantis demon.
Mantis.
Who's positioned herself as all the demons do at any kind of door. They always position themselves at doorways. That's inevitably yeah. – they always get right by the door. And that is where they wield their power because it's the only place in the life in their life they can wield power.
Oh yeah, it's definitely this is like pervasive throughout the whole like lower tier casting community, is that there's this thing where you've given someone a sort of a position of power, of some power, but what happens is because they have that authority, like it's a small authority, all the people around them are they are constantly fawning and very they defer to them constantly, like this guy did. And so it brings them up even more to even a greater false sense of purpose, when really there's nothing happening there at all. Like, you're not doing anything.
It corrupts them. And look, this is why I wanted to talk with you about this, not just because it's such a victorious, interesting story, because in a very small way, it represents the difference between, you know, real journalists, for example.
Oh, exactly, yeah.
Because there's real journalists like Glenn Greenwald. There's mm-hmm. real journalists. And then there's these weird fake journalists, like the guy for Time Magazine. You know, the guy who works for Time Magazine who tweeted, I can't wait to write a story explaining, you know, I can't remember what he put it, but it's basically calling for the a drone strike on Julian Assange.
What?
Yeah, that's called an establishment journalist.
Oh, God. So, I didn't even know about that.
But
it's terrible.
So for fascism to exist, you need a few things.
You need a mouthpiece.
You need a mouthpiece, but you need lapdogs. Mm-hmm. You need people who allow the tyrannical behavior to go on.
Right.
Because guaranteed, man, that whoever that tramp is or idiot is who said that fucking thing to you, she's going to think about it the next time that she says things to people. She might still act that way,
right?
But you put a little burr in her side. Right. And if we put enough burrs in the side of these bridge trolls, then they'll stop, I think.
And I think the ironic thing with that is that, for the most part, things that people tend to book as actors and this tends to be when they go against the grain a little bit.
Yes.
When you surprise someone who, like, let's say you're actually, like, in front of an actual casting director, and maybe you are not, I don't mean to be, like, I'm trying to think how to say this, but something where you're pushing back a little bit, and you're not just fawning, trying to, you're an individual, and you present yourself in a situation where it's not so much that you need them, they need you. And you have to remember that they need you more than you need them.
Praise God. Let me tell you something, friends. If you're an actor in Hollywood, you're like a flea on a dog. Yeah. And there's a lot of fleas on that fucking dog. There's a lot of fleas on that dog, and there's nice little meaty places where there's more blood to suck.
Right.
And those fleas try to fight for that one place. The brave fleas are the ones who realize that there's a lot more dog than these actors think. There's a lot of other places to go to suck that sweet red. And you don't have to just do it in the clustered around these places.
Right.
But the way that the system works right now is they've got us all fucking convinced that there's only a few arteries to get the energy from.
Right. What's the status? It's the same as like journalism or anything else. There's a status quo. And it's so deeply entrenched that it's hard to, unless you really step back and look at it, it's hard to do anything other than what is already there.
Well, man, I mean, I think, I don't know. I don't know. I, you know, I don't want to be the fucking Pied Piper of Hamelin here and lead people into a side of a mountain. If you are familiar with I'm sorry for the spoiler for the Pied Piper of Hamelin. You know the story of the Pied Piper of Hamelin?
I know, I think I know it, right? I don't think I've read it since I was a kid, right?
Basically, the story of the Pied Piper is they get this guy to play the flute to lead the rats into a river.
They're having a rat plague.
Yeah, and he comes in, plays the flute, and the rats follow him into a river. And then he plays the flute again and leads all the kids from the village into the side of a mountain. That's the story of the Pied Piper Hamelin. It's a really eerie ending.
Why did he do it?
Who the fuck knows, man? He's going to chop up those kids in the mountain.
Why did he do it?
No one knows why the Pied Piper Hamelin did it, but there are probably nothing good happened inside that mountain. We'll never know. Maybe there was a paradise for kids in there, but I have a feeling that it's a sausage shop on the other side of that mountain.
Sausage shop.
It's like a kid sausage. So I don't want to lead people into a grinder, but I'm telling you, man, this whole thing about having to have a boss... Mm-hmm. You know, the boss fixation.
Yeah.
Everyone's hooked on a boss and a leader these days. It's like, what the fuck's going on, man? We've got this crazy psychotic idea where it's like, you got to find a good boss.
Right.
Find yourself a good boss and start working for him or her.
Find me a job.
Yeah, yeah.
There's I know he always talks about Kunstler, but he always talks about one of his books. I can't think of. Oh, one of his fiction books, he talks about how, like, post-apocalypse, how all these people who were like captains of industry and had like big rich guys who owned like a bunch of carpet factories and stuff all of a sudden kind of became laborers. And the people who did become leaders are the ones who were just natural leaders. You're like the person who's gonna actually a leader, as opposed to being like a fucking greedy.
I'm not talking about being a leader. I'm talking about being a hunter. And the prey that you're hunting is energy sources that you could feed yourself with, which is why when I'm driving down the – you know, when I was younger and dumb and judgmental and prickish, as I'm sure I am in a lot of ways now, but when I was extremely much more judgmental and prickish, you know, you drive down the highway and you pass people who are selling fruit.
Right.
And you roll – in a way, you kind of roll your eyes. You're like, oh, poor – you feel bad for them.
Right.
Oh, look at them in the heat selling the fruit. Yeah. But really – what they're doing is so awesome. They've taken control of their lives.
Right.
They don't have a – they've gotten a product. They found a place where there's people, and they're fucking selling that shit.
That's what I always think about the guys I see going through the trash to get cans. For a long time, I first used to feel bad about them. But then I'm like, this guy – I mean, he's not making any money. He's making a very small amount. But
we don't know.
He lives – it's his own schedule. He gets to work as much as he wants or as much as he doesn't want to work.
Mm.
So in some sense, it's like, it's kind of great.
It's beautiful.
You're super free. You're totally free.
It's beautiful, yeah. Man. You get yourself free. You get yourself out from underneath those motherfuckers because they're, man, they're everywhere. I'm telling you, there's a war going on right now. And the war is between people, these bridge trolls, these people who managed to get themselves in seats of power – and who have no problem being a dick to people.
Yeah.
By the way, there are great bosses out there. There are a good business is a team enterprise where a group of people have gathered together and focused their will. It's like a coven. A good business should operate like a coven. A group of alchemists, magicians, witches, warlocks, metaphysicians have all merged their will in the direction of bringing something into the earth, whatever the thing is, and the thing that they bring into the earth as a byproduct of the generation of the thing creates money for everyone to prosper from. That's a beautiful thing.
Right.
The merging and fusing of the minds to create this beautiful thing. But then there's the evil boss, which is the enslavement business, which is like, we don't fucking need you. You think we need you? You're lucky you've got this fucking job.
You're lucky to be here, Johnson.
Yeah, yeah, you're lucky to be here. That when it manifests in the form of a boss, what you're seeing there, if you put that person, let's just say that we were operating The Sims. And you could, like, turn the dial of that person's power up to 10 instead of the 0.2 that it is.
Right.
At 10, you got Mussolini.
Right.
At 10, you've got fucking Hitler. Mm. At 10, you've got a beast. Whatever this monstrous twat was that told you to be quiet and then, like, didn't acknowledge her own fault and acted like you were lucky to be there. Her power level is like 0.1 in the world.
Tiny, yeah.
Tiny, tiny little power. Mm-hmm. Little maggot lady.
Spark.
You turn that up to 10. Turn that up to 10. Give her not control over a commercial audition, but let's say that she now has control over a prison. You know what I mean? Let's say that she has control over a prison or a school. Like she's a principal of a school. Or let's say that she's a judge.
Yeah.
You've got disaster.
But you have it everywhere all the time already. That's like half of the judges or any person you talk about, you just mentioned, that's who they are.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's already happened.
Many, many people who put on those black shiny boots, strap their guns on, and put the badge into their fucking pocket, they're the same too. Mm-hmm. Not all of them.
Yeah, it just depends, I guess. You got to watch a lot of episodes of Cops.
Which is really amazing to watch when you consider the fact that drugs shouldn't be illegal.
Yeah. It's also amazing to watch when you see, like cops have a really high suicide rate for a reason. Because sometimes it's like, this job fucking sucks.
No shit.
I have to see the worst of people every day, and I can't do anything about it but lock them up or be like a total dick.
Yeah, imagine.
If you're not a total dick, then it's like you have to deal with the reality of the situation that you cannot change, and you're basically...
Imagine if there was a job where you had to go respond to swarms of wasps, mm-hmm. and you knew that you're just going to probably get stung eventually. Yeah, that's true, man, because people are assholes, and they do freak out, and they do, like, do horrible things, and we need very strong, powerful humans who are armed to get those people under control. But a real problem is that the laws that are currently intact are not really based on those people so much as they are on, like, drugs. Cops, everything on cops mm-hmm. is drug-related offenses.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's all it takes.
If drugs were legal, I don't know that the show Cops could exist.
It would be a much different show. It'd probably be a much sadder show because it'd all be about, like, domestic violence.
Yes.
And, like people taking their kids away and having to... Like, we can't find his head. I guess it got blown off somewhere.
Robberies.
Yeah.
I mean, when you see a fucking cop pull somebody over, like there's one episode, he pulls these kids over, and they smell marijuana in here. Are you guys smoking marijuana? And the kids are like, no, and they let him search the car. The guy finds marijuana. The girl in the car is sitting on the curb. The cop goes over to her and, like, I don't remember what he does. Maybe he tries to handcuff her. Mm-hmm. And she starts screaming. Like, get off of me! Don't touch me! Get off of me! Don't touch me!
She just got three more charges now.
Yes, but it's like her reaction was right.
Yeah.
That is the response you should have to a man trying to put manacles on you because you had a plant substance on you.
Yeah, it's like, dogs dogs bark for a reason.
Yeah, generally, now some reactions to the cops. On the other hand, like when you see a drunk piece of shit who, like, has been driving half asleep and gets pulled over,
right?
And then, like, does that weird thing where they stiffen their arms up to try.
Oh, yeah, that's some weird thing. Yeah, it gets super. No. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Look, I'm so sorry. I did a bad thing. No.
Almost as though. If you could keep your arms up long enough, they'd be like, well, okay, we can't arrest you. See you later, guy.
There's that, that new stop and frisk, well, the old stop and frisk policy they had in New York City where cops can stop and frisk anyone they think is suspicious.
Yes, but they just overturned that.
They overturned it. And, of course, Bloomberg is, like, furious because he thinks it's going to mean, like, white people are going to get raped and murdered in the daytime every 5 seconds. They found out that they stopped and frisked more black men than live in the city of New York. The number of black men they stopped and frisked. So that means some of these guys have been stopped and frisked multiple times in 1 year. And they said they have a 96% failure rate.
Yeah.
So 96% of the time, there's nothing there.
Nothing there.
Nothing at all.
Nothing there.
Yeah.
So that ain't the point.
Nope, it's not. It's to slow you down and make you think about what you're doing.
Yeah.
Make you think about what you're doing with that weed, boy.
It's to remind you that you aren't free.
Yep.
It's to remind you that you must submit to the dragon. It's just a little thing.
If you don't, oh, shit. That's like, that's the best thing. Because they basically created like this little dead man switch where they present an opportunity. It's very easy to stop and frisk, right? But let's say you don't. Let's say you, for some reason, you falter. You say the wrong thing. You refuse. You got six more charges, and you probably brought up on something like a felony.
Yeah.
All because you just didn't quite
react right.
Right. Be calm and simple and, like, demure enough for some fucking idiot.
Imagine if we lived in a theocracy and there were, like, robed servants of the church who walked through the streets and randomly stopped people and asked them to bow down to some ancient god. Excuse me, sir. Do you love and worship Barlarius? Yes, yes, I do. Yes, then prove it on your knees. I want to see the love of Benarius. Show me you love him.
Kiss the emblem on my cloak.
Why do you not bow? Why would you not bow?
Oh, Dashneen, he waited many seconds before bowing to my cloak.
Yeah.
There's something must be going on in the man's mind.
It says in the scrolls of Lorgon that those who do not bow must be punished.
Bring him here. Fetch me my clicker.
Twine his hands and bring him to the chariot. He did not bow.
Fetch the gunt.
Yeah, it is the same. Listen, if you have a high percentage of not finding anything on these people, you really are not looking. At this point, you're not looking for anything. You're just asking them to bow to power.
Right.
Bow to the power. Bow to the power. Bow to the power. When you go to the fucking airport, what are they asking you to do? Bow to the power. Power. Bow to the power. Bow. Bow.
I have a new
bow.
Technique for that.
What?
No eye contact. Not at all. None eye contact.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean,
it's weird how, like, if you do that, if you don't make eye contact with a person, there's something about that that I think is kind of demeaning.
No, I think that's a great form of activism, is to make no eye contact and just wander through. You know what Ari just fucking did?
I don't even want to know, but I want to know.
Ari just, as I talk, forgive me, Ari, if you somehow hear about this and I don't tell the story exactly right, but Ari didn't want to take his shoes off, so he told the, I guess he said he has some kind of medical condition. And they asked him. Anyway, the long and short of it is, the beauty of this story is Ari farted. As the guy was saying, you have to do what I say, Ari farted really loudly.
Was he trying to?
He said it just happened at the perfect time. Ari farted really loudly and said, well, you have to smell my fart.
What did the guy say?
The guy called over sheriffs, you know. They called over cops. But they couldn't do anything because here's the awesome, crazy beauty of this country is that there's still this fucking constitution, and they can't override the constitution. They want to, but they can't. So they're fucking. It like rattles their little goddamn. Lizard brains when people have the audacity to stand up to power. It freaks them out, man.
Even if it's just like a little thing, or it's like just a little, just a small thing. It's like, whoa, 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 whoa. What?
Yeah.
Like that's such a small thing. To say you have to smell my fart, it's basically meaningless.
Yeah, but it's still, it's like, it's, the more these things happen, the more there's just, you know, I think that Martin Luther King had it right. Non-violent resistance is the greatest form of resistance, because as long as you resist, make it hard for them, and make it public,
it's infuriating.
It embarrasses them. Like when you have when you see the in fucking the marches in Mississippi, when you see black people getting hosed down and they're just sitting with their hands behind their back, passive, peaceful resistance forces the dragon to be violent. When the dragon is violent, it illuminates the fact of who's right and who's wrong.
You also, when something loses its cool like that, it's becomes vulnerable. Because it starts to get stupid. You get stupid when you're going crazy.
When
you get angry, you get stupid.
Yeah, and
when you get stupid, that means that it makes you smarter by default, because you're dealing with something that's become the variables shrunk, so it's easier to deal with. It's easier to compartmentalize, because it's just this. It's like a fucking angry dog.
It's beautiful, man. Like this thing that happened to Glenn Greenwald's boyfriend. You know about this, right?
I didn't know he was gay.
Yeah,
wow, he's
gay.
Fucking terrible. Jesus Christ.
Evil man!
What a fucking true evil
bastard.
He's gay?
He's so wonderful. Like
he's great.
He got in a tweet interaction with someone on Twitter. Some dumb lady was like, you and your, quote, friend. And he's like, friend? Why do you keep calling him a friend? It's my spouse. What are you, from 1954? I love him. But Greenwald's... partner, got detained.
Yeah.
You know about this, right?
No, I don't know anything about
it.
I've been in a hole.
Glenn Greenwald lives in Brazil with his boyfriend, or husband, I guess. And his husband was flying into, it was flying into the UK. Right. And the plane landed. They said, everyone coming out of the plane, please show your passports. Greenwald's husband gets, or partner, I don't know if they're married. He said it's a husband, spouse.
Partner, yeah.
Greenwald's spouse gets detained under a terrorism statute that says that they can hold him for 9 hours and question him, and he can't get attorneys or cops. They destroyed his hard drive. They took all his shit. They confiscated his computer.
This is in Brazil?
This is in the UK.
Oh, the UK.
But this is in the fucking UK.
Is he in the UK? Is this like a? Is he in like a piece of America, like the embassy where they have in the airport where it's
He's a, no. This is in the UK. The UK is okay. Also has a similar. Apparently, has a similar.
They have their version of the Patriot.
They have their version of the NSA.
Yeah.
And Snowden is revealing this, and Greenwald is at the helm, and the Guardian is at the helm. They destroyed hard drives. They destroyed the Guardian's hard drives. So you can see that Greenwald's spouse's reaction, had it been in any way violent, had he reacted in any kind of violent way, it would completely diminish his position.
Right.
But if you stay cool, then these people are shown to be what they really are.
Right.
And what they really are is power-hungry corporatists. And the more that you fucking stand up to them in really subtle yet public ways, I think the more that their power shrinks.
Yep.
Which is why you deserve a Nobel Prize for shaking the war stick at that little demon. Yeah, man, I think that it's – the more I think about it, the more I realize that, like, not – that you, I always ask people, like, what's something that you can do to fight against this kind of bullshit? Mm-hmm. And I think the answer is recognize that this bullshit doesn't just exist in the government.
Oh, it's everywhere because it trickles down and it's every sort of thing. It's all over the place. But I think sometimes I think the best thing you can do is if you're super polite all the time, it's like goes back to the same thing, like being nonviolent and being calm. So where if you always put it upon the other person to be the aggressor, to make the mistake, to be the person who's making something out of nothing,
then it
just puts the spotlight on them and like you're being ridiculous.
So maybe throwing down your papers and saying fuck you was a little reactive. Maybe there was a better way to do it to be like, well, you know, I think that you're a fascist pig twat. See, that's the same thing.
Well, for me, it was just like I was just done with this. Like I said, I didn't really think about it because I knew there was nothing. Because you can't explain something to a person in that situation and have it come out any way that is going to be beneficial to anyone, even yourself. It's like a thing where certain things are just a lost cause. And you have to just extract yourself from the equation. Be like, oh, this is just a bad situation that I don't need to be in.
I think it's sometimes you just recognize when you've gotten yourself in a place where someone's trying to dominate you, maybe.
Yeah.
And ask yourself, do I want to be dominated? Yeah. And if the answer to that is no, I don't feel like being dominated right now, then don't let them.
Then leave.
Then leave. Yeah. Get out of the situation. Don't let them address it. Don't address the – if you want to be dominated, and there's lots of great times to be dominated, let it happen. But when you get around some puffed up shit pig who's being brown-nosed by every loser, squirming, hungry, impoverished
fawning, tardling.
Then that person, don't water their weeds with your submission.
Exactly.
It's hard, though, man.
I'm getting too old for this shit.
It's hard, though, right? It's hard because we've been taught to ass kiss.
Yeah, it's very hard. But I really think, though, if you don't do it all the time, good things come of it. Because it's like that thing where, I don't know. It's in so many things, but it's a thing where if you try something you wouldn't normally do, it kind of makes you scared. You're like, wow, that wasn't so bad, and actually something great came of it. Because it's like, you know, if you're doing stand-up and you're really fucking around, you don't care, that's sometimes when the best stuff happens.
Because
you're just like, oh, like that was just – I didn't care at all. I'm just actually totally just having fun.
Oh, it's throwing yourself out into the void, man. Mm-hmm. It's like walking past the light of the campfire into the forest of your fear and just dealing with the abyss. You know, I hate it, man. I just, you know, we talked about it. I just did that, man. It just throws me into the
stand-up, yeah.
Yeah, not stand up, but, you know, I'm saying in life.
Right.
Sometimes you got to go into the dark, mm-hmm. you know, where you're not prepared to go because right. it gets you closer to what you really are. And for whatever reason, the universe is built with a security system installed that keeps you from going into those places. I don't know why, but you know that you're getting close to where you're not supposed to be the moment the fear happens. Mm-hmm. You know, the fear starts rising in you, or the loneliness starts rising in you, or the sense of the moment you trick yourself into thinking, like, I'll never find anyone again. That people think that sometimes. And it's not just with a relationship. It's with a boss.
Oh, it's anything.
I'll never find a job like this again. I'll never find a place like this again. I'll never find a lover like this again. I'll never find a dog like this again.
And then you won't, because you're saying that. You won't find it.
Well, yeah. And that mentality is so crazy. That mentality is a scarcity mentality. Mm-hmm. And God damn it, we don't live in a universe of scarcity.
Abundance.
I don't know. I could be wrong, man, but sometimes I feel like we're in the Garden of Eden, only we've gotten so high on human neurology that we're having these terrible trips where we think we're in a desert.
Yeah, well, I always think about this. I interviewed this guy on a podcast a while ago, like a year ago. He's this black dude named Lee Weaver. He grew up in Florida. Like, he's in his 80s, right? Old man. And he was telling me how when he grew up in Florida, he's like, I didn't know we were poor. We had everything. We had mangoes, we had papayas, right. had donkeys and chickens. I thought it was the greatest thing ever. I didn't know we were poor.
Yeah.
But it's like, I found out later, we were incredibly poor.
Yeah.
But he had no idea, because it's like, fuck it, man. What is it? You are rich because you have, if you have food to eat and you're having fun and you have family and friends, like that's pretty wealthy.
Pretty wealthy.
That's pretty, if you have freedom at all and you That's like extreme wealth. That's massive amounts of wealth.
Yep.
And I always think about that. I'm like, yeah, you know what? That's so, you think about it's such a great way to think about things that you because kids always they find joy in things that adults just somehow found a way to overlook. Well, like chips. Like fucking chips.
Chips
are so good.
Yes.
Tortilla chips.
Chips in a swimming pool, baby.
Give a kid like a couple bags of tortilla chips. That's like the best thing you can
give a kid some tortilla chips and chips. Take them to a public pool and tell them you're going to watch Finding Nemo in the evening, and you've basically given them space tourism.
Right.
It's joy. I can remember, man, there was a swimming pool when I visit my dad after the divorce. He had a swimming pool at his apartment complex, and I can remember every once in a while I'd be like, hey, we're going to go to a movie tonight. And I would be swimming in the pool thinking, in like 4 hours, I'm going to be fucking watching a movie, and I would be in paradise.
Yeah, it's great to look forward to things.
But the ghoul climbs on our backs. It whispers in our ears. The next thing we know, suddenly we're wandering. We think we're in a graveyard when it's just this verdant, beautiful orchard filled with ripe fruits for us to eat from. But we've convinced ourselves that whatever this thing or that thing is the only thing. That nothing else exists. This is the only well. This is the only fruit tree. This is the only vagina or penis.
There's a lot of them, especially if they perfect that vaginal ball.
What's
that? About
this
in Australia?
No.
They're making this vaginal
sounds
ball.
I thought you meant like like some kind of like dance event.
Oh yeah, it's a vaginal celebration. They made a giant labia out of this weird like neuroplastic magic foam. It's about 3 miles long, and it just opens up at first light, and all this it takes all the light in. It's like a giant leaf, and it sucks it in, and then it sprays out this crazy pink liquid that anyone can eat, and it's really tasty. And it's,
what?
I'm just kidding. Yeah.
God damn it. Don't do that to me, man. For a second, I'm like, this is the greatest thing I've ever heard.
It's Ayers Rock. Ayers Rock is a giant space vagina. Did you know about this?
What?
You know Ayers Rock?
No.
It's that big rock that's out in the what do they call it? The middle of...
Milky Way?
What do they call that shit in Australia, where the desert is? They have a name for it.
The Outback.
There's a big rock on the Outback called Ayers Rock. I don't know where it came from. It's an old rock. It's, you know, it's eons old. And they found out that it's just a space vagina. It's just a giant...
Wow.
It's where the moon came out of. All the moons, they came out of the hole in there. Like that's why Aborigines stay there. That's what Dreamtime's all about. They dream about being rebirthed through the giant rock vagina.
Can we get back to the vaginal ball real quick? What is that?
Well, I think that's like it's like a soccer ball, except instead of having those little hexagons of color, it's vaginas.
Really?
It's like your fuck blob. Remember your fuck blob?
That old rusty shit bin.
That's like a 10-year-old joke, right?
That's a fucking... That joke is old.
Have you ever brought it back?
That joke is pre-September 11.
Should I tell the joke?
Sure.
I don't know if I can tell it. Okay. God, guys, I can't leave my house anymore. I just got one of these new
fuck
blobs.
No, that's not, what was I guess.
I got a new fuck blob?
The joke... Guys, okay. This is one of the first jokes I ever wrote. And the joke is...
It's a fuck blob.
Did you hear they're building these, you know, I don't know if you guys heard about this, but they just genetically engineered fish that can glow in the dark. Can you imagine that? There's scientists actually spending their time genetically engineering fish to glow in the dark. Why don't they make a fuck blob? Wouldn't that be great? Just a round bulbous thing covered in lips and vaginas that lives off human sexual secretions.
You've definitely done that a lot.
I've done it so much in the past. Wow. I haven't done it. You know, I haven't done it in eons. And then I did the ice house with Rogan.
Yeah.
And we were like, I did it again. And because we were all going to do our oldest joke that we could remember. And it was weird. I was like, fuck, man. I remember this cadence of the thing. I remember it so well. I must have done it a million times.
It's muscle memory. It's like muscle memory in your mouth.
What is a vaginal ball? Is that really what it is? It's a soccer ball you fuck?
I just made it up because I was thinking about your fuck blob.
But you were saying something about like, this is, so there's no vaginal ball.
No, it's nothing. They're called,
You're talking about Benoit balls?
No, I was making it up totally.
I can't believe I got sucked into your goddamn your confusing. I can't believe you led me down that path.
I convinced some people the other day that Sandra Oh was not Asian.
Who's
She's
Sandra?
An actress.
Oh?
I did some show, some panelist show that they were. It's like talking about items in the news, and they're talking about how Sandra Oh, who's an Asian American actress, is leaving the show Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
Which is a show that's really great, and we should all watch it. And she's leaving it, but I was like, you know, she's not Asian, right?
Johnny, we got to. I know you got to go.
I do got to go.
But I want you to turn your beautiful, your beautiful mind,
yes,
into the direction of the light. Because right now, I know there are people listening to this,
right,
who are sad.
They're sad.
They're worried about their job.
About their jobs.
They may have just broken up with somebody. They may have been broken up with. There's people who are listening to this who are. Or maybe sick or experiencing real loss. There could be people in Syria right now listening to this.
Or Egypt.
Give them some love, Johnny. Give them some hope. Let me hear it.
So you want a story? You want just like a generic
platitude?
Whatever platitude?
Comes to you.
Some love. Okay. Well, one time I was down at the river. There's a small river by my house where I grew up. It's called the Zumbro. And I was down there, and it's a dirty, scummy river full of crappie. It's a shit fish. And there's this dog, and it's pretty small. It looks like 20 pounds, a medium-sized dog. And he is swimming in the river, but he's swimming upstream. Then all of a sudden, these two trees, out of nowhere, bust out of the ground and bend over the river. And they're willow trees, right?
Yeah.
And all these things start whipping around.
Yeah.
Like crazy whips, like a willow tree, just...
Yeah.
And I'm like, how am I... Where's everyone? I'm the only person seeing this right now?
Yeah.
There's a bike trail by there. There's no one on the bike trail. There's a McDonald's a couple miles away.
Okay.
I can't see the McDonald's all of a sudden. And they're whipping around.
Yeah.
These willow wisps. And this dog is swimming upstream. The dog's looking at this willow tree like, man, this is bad, right?
Yeah.
Because he's trying to get upstream for some reason.
Yeah.
And these willow wisps, they're just going to kill him. They turn into razor wire, basically.
Yeah.
And that dog barks three times. The trees recede. The dog says, oh, I'll just go their direction down the river. I'll just go with the flow. And the dog went with the flow.
Yeah.
And then he hopped out into my arms, and I rode him back home.
And beautiful.
It was really pretty, and I just... was so happy to be with that little dog.
Beautiful story.
Yeah.
Beautiful story. So, guys, ride the dog home.
Ride the dog home.
And on the way there, jab your stick of love into the fascist hides of these twats standing at the doors of power. My sweet loves, Johnny Pemberton, where can people find you?
Internet. Internet, feral audio.
Links to Pemberton will be at DougAtRussell.com. If you guys like the Doug at Russell Family Hour podcast, please give us a nice rating on on iTunes.
Listen to Twisting the Wind.
Listen to Johnny Pemberton's Twisting the Wind. And for God's sakes, we just got all these new shirts are coming into the shop at DuckAtRussell.com. Wouldn't you please just buy one of our shirts if you feel like it? If not, I don't care. Just enjoy the podcast. And hopefully, since I'm going to do less opening monologues now in the old way. So maybe there'll be more of these, because now I just get to go upload this into the computer and I'm done.
You're done.
Instead of spending days on these things, which I have to do, I'll do both. I love you guys. Thank you, Johnny.
Love you too.
Bye. Thanks for listening, everyone. This is No Name Number One from the album Roman Candle by the great Elliott Smith. Bye.
Spooky and withdrawn, like it could be underwater. The mighty mother with her hundred arms swept on the side. I hate to walk behind the people's ambition. I saw you waiting, same light with your
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.